It's March 8th. We are doing the Psalms of Ascent class. Welcome. My name is Adam King. I'm filling in for Chris. We're going to be in Psalm 121. Let's pray and we'll get started. Father, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning, to study your word, to go deeper into it. Thank you for your people who are made in your image. And as we discuss your word, the things and experiences that you have given your people bring life and color to how your word applies to each of us. So I'm so thankful for this class, the opportunity to talk with one another about your word. I pray that you bless us going forward. In your son's name we pray. Amen. Okay. So Psalm 121. I was not present for Chris's introduction. I don't know if you guys were. But these Psalms of Ascent, just in short, are about a journey, a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And they're going uphill, ascending, ascents. So I know that he talked about how these psalms had a very specific relevance to them physically as they pilgrimed to Jerusalem, uphill, to the temple, to worship. But those real-life experiences, that walking uphill, that pilgrimage, is also a picture of our own journey in our Christian life. So these psalms absolutely apply to us. And Psalm 121, I mean, just beautiful for our Christian walk, how we should live our Christian life, what we should think about God as we go on this pilgrimage. So no further ado there, let's read the text and see what we can glean from it. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. So the first thing to think about is this question in verse 1. Where does my help come? From where does my help come? They're lifting their eyes up to the hills. Carly and I were talking about this. This is one of her favorite psalms. There's actually several ways to look at this question and to think about the hills. Okay, the most readily available option to us as we think about this is that the fact that they're climbing up the hill to worship in Jerusalem, right? And as we climb, we're looking forward into the future to our heavenly home, to the new Jerusalem, to where we will worship God without any more weakness, any more sin, any more suffering. And so we both them and us are looking forward to something and to worship. But he's asking the question, where does his help come from? And so there's another way of looking at this, looking at it, one, from the aspect of up to the temple, Jerusalem, where I'm going to worship. Also, there are many themes throughout Scripture of meeting God on a mountain, right? And seeing him up on a high place. From the giving of the law to the transfiguration of Jesus, this is a common theme throughout Scripture. Another theme, and negative one, is going up to the hills to worship false gods. So it was very common for people in that time to ascribe, we can say what's common between those two things is to ascribe to the tops of mountains a place of importance in worship. And if you're a hiker, you understand this, okay? Just even physically, you go to the top of a hill and the majesty, the beauty of being up in a high place. There is something in our souls that resonates with this height, this ascent, and how we feel about that place. But on the negative side, there is the worship of false gods. And when we're asking this question, where does my help come from? We can look at it, I think, both ways. Whichever interpretation is right, I think we can still glean from this text. He's asking, does my help come from the hills? Does it come from a place? Okay, and I think we can get there because of verse 2. My help comes from the Lord. So they've lifted their eyes. The hills. Okay, yeah, I'm behind in my slide clicking as usual. Help comes from divine personhood. Who God is in and of himself. The help is not the structure. The help is not even this lofty place. The help is not necessarily physical in the sense of tied to a location. The help comes from the Lord. The help comes from the Lord. And so whether you're going there to this place of meeting to find the Lord there, or whether you are seeking to find help from false gods, right? From gods who promise to give you whatever it is that you ask for. So these false gods, right, they would go to them and sacrifice for fertility. When I mean for fertility, both for people and for their land. They would go to these false gods for many various reasons, and these sacrifices were tied specifically to specific blessings that would be given. And so we do the same thing. We look to things to satisfy us, to give us help and comfort. We look to certain sins that give us help and comfort, but they do not. Ultimately, they dry up and leave us wanting. And I've studied a little bit of history and how the worship of these gods went. There's gods, like the gods, demons, okay? And they're very closely associated with each other in these foreign lands, right? The gods that they worship and the demons, and certain ones of them, especially Baal, Ashtaroth, requiring human sacrifice. I mean, it seems pretty innocent to maybe pour out some wine to a god, but to pour out human blood, we're talking about sacrifice of demons here. And there's a sense in which, throughout history and literature, in which the devil keeps his appointments. He keeps his promises, but they're not with the result that is not favorable for the person, right? It's a common theme throughout history and literature. How, yeah, he'll give you what you're asking for, but what you're asking for is the wrecking of your own soul by going to him. So where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, from a person, the person of the divine God himself. The maker. So if there's any confusion about when they're going up to the hill, who this person is, it's the maker of heaven and earth. It's the maker of heaven and earth. He made the heavens and the earth and the hills and the feelings we experience when we get on the hills. He made all of it. And so when we're looking for help, let's be careful that we look for help to the only one who really has any control over any of this stuff. To the only one who designed it. Everything good that comes from nature, and lots of good comes from nature, lots of common graces given to us from nature. The food and the clothing and all this, the way the whole earth and universe is ordered is by God's good design, and many good things come from it, but it's all because he designed it to be that way, and he sustains it. So where does my help come from? The only answer can be, my help comes from the Lord who made these things, who made heaven and earth, heaven, the sky, where rain comes from and waters the ground, and therefore things grow up and flourish. Water, so that we can drink. All these things, heaven and earth, all the things that come up from the earth, all the things that crawl and creep on the earth, all of this is from God. So when we think about this and kind of the end of the psalm, and all these occurrences of help, help, help. Where does my help come? Who is my helper? We can really, really, we're really, really called to faith here, to trust the God of the universe who made all these things. Any thoughts or questions on this so far? Any pushback, Carly, on my alternative view? She was very excited about the picture of going up to Jerusalem. Yeah. And as we think about that, there's as a Jew would read the Torah or hear it spoken, how many occasions, stories, it's not just a set of rules that we find in the Torah. Though they call it the law, right? They think of it as the set of rules for their life. And it is that. How many stories are there of God meeting them where they're at? So there is a sense of going to meet him in the place where he is, right? I agree with Carly in that, and that's what they were seeking to do. But how many occurrences, stories in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, where the Lord meets them where they're at? And one of my favorites is Abraham, where the Lord has decided to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and the scriptures picture God as standing there in front of him, waiting for him to intercede on behalf of the people. Just kind of like, you going to do it? But he meets them right there. How many times does God meet them where they're at? So yes, there is both this sense of I'm traveling to where my help comes from, and because the Lord is the one who made the heavens and the earth, he can meet me right where I'm at. Every valley, every shadow in the valley of death.
And we have to think about how many promises God
made. Yes.
In those stories.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a joy to study Psalm 119 in my Zoom group. And that's a common recurring theme. The promises are keeping the person who's in anguish, right? Really, truly, resting and leaning on the promises that God has made in his Torah. And so, absolutely, we have to think of all these things. Where does my help come from? The one who made heaven and earth. Verse 3. He will not let your foot be moved. No sprained ankles. What do you guys think about that? Has anyone... in this pilgrimage had anything like a sprained ankle in your pilgrimage to experience in your pilgrimage to meet God and to be met by God? Have you had a sprained ankle? It doesn't have to be literal. Maybe you've had a real one. Yeah.
I hear it's hard to get over a sprained ankle.
Yeah. I was playing as a teenager and stepped on a pine cone, of all things. And most pine cones, you know, just crunch under your feet, but this one was particularly tough. And it rolled my foot and broke it's the only bone I've ever broken, just a little. Don't tell the army, I said I didn't break any bones. But anyways, because it was so small and insignificant, right? But just a little bone in my foot. And the next day, I felt like I was gonna throw up every time I walked on it. I thought maybe I'd, you know, sprained, you know, it's a muscle thing, right? But I broke my one little bone in my foot, and the next day, every time I walked on it, I just felt like I can't do this. And yeah, so we've literally sprained our ankles, and that's what he says. He won't let your foot be moved. So does anyone else have a question in that? We experience physical difficulty as human beings. Period. We do. And so what does he mean by he won't let your foot be moved? Well, I think he expands on it by saying he who keeps you will not slumber. So another aspect of our physical experience, driving 8 hours to Pennsylvania, 12 hours to Florida. Does anyone just maybe your eyes start to droop and you just need a little nap? Or maybe you're a dad, you know, and really just anytime you sit down in any place, you know, you just start to, okay, right? I can do it anywhere, anytime. Nathan, I know Nathan's agreeing with me. Let's stand on your feet. Otherwise, it's lights out. And just a little, I'm just resting my eyes. But God doesn't do that. God doesn't do that. He doesn't slumber or sleep. We're going to answer this question of the sprained ankle in a minute, I promise. But the one who is watching over you, who's keeping you, doesn't take naps, doesn't snooze, doesn't take a seat and it's just been a little too much of a drive, a little too much of a day for him. Behold, he who keeps Israel. So he keeps us. Again, this theme of keeping is a relationship. He keeps Israel. Just calling the name up of Israel makes us remember all the things he has done in their journey, in their pilgrimage, to take care of them, to keep them from their wanderings in the desert to before their journey to Egypt, their time in Egypt where they multiplied into a great nation, their exiles, numerous and various, their conflicts. All these things draw to mind, again, the stories of how God is actually keeping his people, like evidence in history. He's doing this. And he is in a relationship with them, a covenant relationship with them. He's promised, as we've said, certain things. And he's promised and sworn by himself that he will do it. It's not just a conditional one. There is some conditions in the Mosaic Law, but there are unconditional promises as well, where he swears by himself, I will do this. So behold, he who keeps Israel will recall to their minds as they sing and pray, yes, he has kept us. And we're in a relationship with the one true God of the universe. And he has proved it over and over again. He who keeps Israel has no need of 8 hours. He will neither slumber nor sleep. He doesn't need the rest that we do. He is awake, vigilant, always watching, always keeping. Never a moment of our lives is he not looking over it. And he's unlimited in his ability to take care of us, in his power, in his knowledge of the situation, in his knowledge of every situation, in all of time. So when we come to the one, when we look to the hills and from whom our help comes from, there's never a time where he has missed something, where he has not been aware of what's going on. He doesn't sleep. He's always watching. Always watching us. Always awake. He has no need of 8 hours. The Sabbath was given for us. It wasn't because he needed a break. It was given for us. He never needs a break. He never takes a Sabbath. Never a rest. So from where does our help come from? It comes from God himself, who doesn't tire of helping us, who doesn't tire of keeping us. And he made everything. All the things that we could ever need are available to him at any moment. Wow, what a God to worship. As we look at these Psalms of Ascent, we should be led in worship by the scriptures themselves. He's a great God who's there for us at every moment. Any other thoughts on this? Questions? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's the tendency of the human heart. It's to look to ourselves and our own strength. Okay, I have a sprained ankle. I bandage it up. Okay, that's good. God has given us wisdom. We do these things. But there's stories of where sprained ankles, literally a foot disease in King Asa, wrecked his relationship that he previously had. And it says after he had already failed in some respect, God essentially gave him a foot disease. Okay, so the sprained ankles even come from him, right? The things that we experience come from him. And it says even in that, he sought help from the physicians. And we're like, okay, well, that's normal, right? You got a disease, you go to the physician. But the prophet had come to him and said, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, looking to show himself powerful for those whose heart is blameless toward him. The one who never slumbers and sleeps, we're given this really vivid imagery of someone scanning the horizon, looking for someone to help. To show up for. And then he still doesn't do it. After the prophet says this, he gets the foot disease and he still doesn't seek the Lord, right? And there's a way that we can go about this life in self-sufficiency in the place of darkness, thinking God doesn't have this corner of the universe. Really, that's what we're thinking, right? Because we're forgetting that he made the heaven and the earth. We're forgetting that he sets up rulers and brings them down. All the foreign nations that oppressed them were under his thumb. Forever, always, they were. They were under his control and his providence. And so, yeah, we forget that, and then we trust ourselves in our own wisdom and understanding. And there is absolutely a way to go to the physician trusting in the Lord. Please don't hear me say that we don't ever need to go and seek these things, right? We would be fools to not bandage up our sprained ankle, to give it some sure footing. But it's talking about our heart posture towards God. Do we trust him? Do we trust him with these things? This psalm is definitely drawing our attention to this. And I love that it's drawing our attention to the real physical things that we face. You know, it's going to go into some more, sun and moon and these things. So it's just a joy to go to the scriptures and know it's addressing both our spiritual needs, not abstractly, but in real life, as we experience a sprained ankle. And you're absolutely right. And he's really going to drive this home, I think, in verses 7 and 8, as he says this, as we think about this song. So we're going to hammer that theme a lot more. Absolutely. And the next one, he's your keeper. He is the shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day. So we have a sprained ankle here, and now we have sunstroke. Dehydration, okay? Working up in those trees all day long. I don't know, like, you have a policy like the Army does, like, drink water, you know, like, that's what they did in basic training. Drink water, and everyone has to repeat, drink water, and then we grab our little camelbacks and look like a bunch of kids on our little sippy straws, just felt like kids because they're telling us, they have to tell us, drink water. Yeah, your watch, okay, yeah. Bring that to our technology seminar tonight. But we have these reminders, and he's saying it won't strike you. And I think, you know, Nathan's right. We start to think, well, yeah, sunstroke, I've seen it, you know, and they certainly experience that, right? In their pilgrimage, they're not going to always be in shade, in the shade of trees, but God himself is their shade. So he's keeping them physically, even in the sunstroke, then nor the moon by night. So this could be interpreted a couple ways, but I think the easiest one for us to grasp is just any kind of danger that comes at night, right? There are many kinds of dangers that we experience in darkness, of cold, of wild animals, and we don't experience them in our really comfortable place here in America, but at least not to the extent that they would have. But in their journeying, as you go from one place to another, again, Army analogy, your rucksack packed and you're in the field, out there where all the dangers are, the spiders, the snakes, the coyotes, all these things. There are plenty of night perils, right? So he's our keeper. He's awake in all these times, right? He's alert. The sun won't strike you, nor the moon by night. Night perils won't get you. So let's get to where we need to go here. As Nathan was saying, the spiritual aspect of this, because we can just be left with so many questions as we think about this. The sun certainly strikes both the just and the unjust. The moon and all the dangers of the night. I was going to mention lunacy. Luna, our moon. There's just a lot of association with being out at night. There is at least beliefs throughout history that being out in the nighttime would create some craziness in you. And if you have worked the night shift, I did briefly at Baptist Hospital. I can understand the lunacy, but both the psych patients I watched, both the psych patients I watched, they came out at night, and they really did. And also the staying awake at night when you're having a journey in the night, be awake for any reason. It's against the way God designed us to work. He designed us to rest in that time, and so you experience some things as you stay awake. But again, night perils, whether it be ones like sunstroke that you know, come from staying up all night, or the things that are in the night that go bumping in the night, to use a Winnie the Pooh phrase. whatever it is, God is keeping you in that whole time. He will keep you from all evil. One of my favorite quotes that I discovered as I was studying this is from Jordan Peterson, from a book, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. Sounds a lot like what Rich has trumpeted for years and years in his ministry. A long obedience in the same direction. It's his interpretation of the Psalms of Ascent. Highly recommend the book. Just like any book, it's not the scriptures, but it's lots of things to consider in it. And in this one, he says, he will keep us from all... Huh?
Eugene,
thank you.
Different.
Yeah.
Different.
Also, some of his books are all right, but anyways. Yeah, Eugene Peterson. All evil. He's given us a sprained ankle, sunstroke, moon perils, night perils. Will he really keep us from all these things? Will we never experience them? We've all attested here in this room, of course we'll experience these things. As human beings, we do. So what does he mean that he will keep you from all evil and that he will keep your life? What it means is that when you experience sunstroke, when you experience a sprained ankle, when you experience all of the brokenness of this world, fill in the blank, okay? He's given us three examples. We could fill in the blank with more. When you experience any of these things, that none of these are actually going to affect your soul. None of these have the power in and of themselves to affect your soul. Jesus taught us this, right? It's like, why do you worry about all these things? Why are you anxious about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink? And when he talks about how I'm thinking of another reference where fear not the one who can destroy the body. Fear instead the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. And so if we understand who our keeper is, he is keeping our soul. None of these things have, for the child of God, any power over our soul. Zero. And so these statements are completely true. Okay? Even as you sprain your ankle, even as you experience sunstroke and dehydration, even as you experience the perils of the nights, none of them will affect your soul. I'm preaching later and I'm getting preachy now, but none of them will get to your soul. Not a single one. All the water in the world, he says, Eugene Peterson, all the water in the world cannot sink a ship unless it gets inside of it. And it won't, because God is keeping us. You feel it in your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to hear this, right? And we need to hear it because it's true that he's keeping our souls. But as we experience the darker sides of our life and our pilgrimage, what Jesus was calling us to remember is that if we look to the hills where the demons are essentially being worshipped, right? If we look to any other thing other than him, then we're giving our souls to something else, right? And so it's a call to trust. It's a call to faith, to really trust in the one who keeps your soul, to really believe in him and not other things, not substitutes for him, that will, if you place your trust in them, in the end, in the final analysis, you will have given your soul to something else, and no other being is going to keep your soul from all evil. Okay, so as you walked in that period of darkness, there's an opportunity presented to you on your pilgrimage. Will I place my trust in something else? And we do this. We We do this even as believers, right? We'll look to other things. I don't want us to paint a picture of a complete perfection in our Christian walk, right? This is not what the psalm is teaching, that there is perfection in this Christian life. But what it is teaching is that every time you trust in the Lord, every time you trust in the Lord, and because you've been born again, He is preserving your life. So there is a sense of already and not yet. He's already accomplished it in you. And so you can say, no sunstroke, no sprained ankles for me. I will make it. I will make it. And at the same time, we have this battle going on in our very, the center of ourselves to trust in something else. I believe that God will preserve us until the end. And I also believe that we will persevere. And when I say that we will persevere, I don't mean that in a sense of if you don't persevere or you're in a season of not persevering, well, then you're going to lose your salvation. That God all of a sudden is going to say, never mind, I'm not keeping you anymore. But I mean perseverance in the sense that God has, in this journey, prepared good works for us to do in advance, right? That he has given us a path and a journey to where those who are his will, in the end, make it, will arrive. And there will be fruit. There will be a joy along the way. It's not just when we get there. It's also along the way. Yeah, he will keep you from all evil. He'll keep your life and your pilgrimage. He'll keep your going out and your coming in. Oh, right now and forever. Right now and forever. So there's never a time. Never a time. And you're going out and you're coming in all of your journeys, wherever you go, wherever you're at. So we've seen that he's never slumbering or sleeping. He's always awake. And also his omnipresence here, right? So he's always powerful. He made heaven and earth. He's omniscient. He sees everything because he never slumbers or sleeps. And he's everywhere. All three of these things are present in the psalm. And here he's saying, it doesn't matter where you're at, right? And as we talked about, their pilgrimage from a place of darkness and physical darkness and despair in a nation that does not worship the God, worship God, where he seems absent, he's not, is what this is saying. Where he seems absent, he's not. There's no corner of this universe that he is not present in, keeping you. Always. He's eternal. So many things to worship here in our God. And so I pray that as you go on your own pilgrimage, as you think about these things, that you'll be reminded that I think that Eugene Peterson quote just really sums it up for me. All the water in the world cannot sink a ship unless it gets inside of it. And God's not going to let that happen. He's not. Any questions or comments as we conclude? 100% true. I have navigated this 40 minutes without preaching the sermon I'm about to preach. where it says that Jesus is our helper. So I did it. I can't believe it. I did it. But you have led us a transition into what I will talk about this morning. Yes, absolutely. I love one of the things that's said about the book of Psalms. It's Jesus' hymn book. It's Jesus' hymn book. As he experienced this life, some of these things in the Psalms, if you have, just, they're a head scratcher. How does this apply to me? It's because it applies fully to Jesus. It applies fully to Jesus. And so, yes, as we're found in him, he keeps us from all evil. Because we are found in him, he keeps us from all evil.
He's our keeper.
Yes. 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 See the sermon in 20 minutes. So, yeah. Thank you, guys. Let's be dismissed.